This is Radio Influence.
You know her from network radio, but now she's on the net and in your head. This is the Fabulous Sports Babe on Radio Influence.
Hey, it's me. It's the Fabulous Sports Babe. It's the Babecast that's going on. I am the Babe, as you know that. We have many things to talk about today. First of all, something just killed me just now. You might have to listen to this thing. I'm getting hurt terribly. Do you think I need a Band-Aid on that? No. Well, it looks like I could. Okay, we'll do mother stuff. All right, let me just tell you what's going on. I don't know about you, but I'm going to talk to Robert Littell. Now, I happen to like him. He's the editor of Black Sports Online. And he has a really good thought here because it's about writers and wanting to be on TV. And do you want to write or do you want to be? It's very interesting about how he sees it. And I wonder, you know, do you feel the same thing about, especially if you're young and you're coming into writing, are you just doing this till you get a job on TV? And then you can say whatever you want to. Robert's very good at that. And I think we'll end up talking about that. I got hurt really bad here and no one cares. Do I need a Band-Aid? No one seems to be getting me a Band-Aid and I got hurt really bad. We have to go talk to Robert Littell because you know what? He's pretty good and I like him. Let's talk to him now. Robert, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that you wrote about Black Sports Online, and you were wondering, is it about God? Is it about complex? What is it? And you talked a lot about Joe Mixon and things like that. So let's talk a little bit about that, because I think if you have a blog or you're writing something at Black Sports Online, it's very different if I'm writing for the Kansas City Chiefs and I'm writing in a newspaper there. They're going to give you more information than they're going to give me. They will never tell me the truth about anything, won't they?
Well, I mean, I think from an independent standpoint, you can speak more freely about some of your thoughts and be a little bit more blunt about some of your assessments, because you're not, in your case, you know, you're not like someone in Kansas City. They're local. They have to deal with Tyreek Hill on an everyday basis. They have to deal with the team. You know, it's kind of a balance of how much are you talking about the sport? How much are you talking about outside of the sport? How do you be, you know, fair and balanced? I think, you know, my point for that particular article was that we have to, as journalists, we're taught, all of us are taught to be fair and balanced and unbiased. And it's not that we shouldn't give our opinions or we shouldn't have editorials or we shouldn't have strong thoughts about certain things, but if you're going to have those thoughts, they need to be consistent across the board. And I'm seeing more and more that consistency is wavering and is going more towards, you know, what's the hot thing to say right now? What's the thing that I can say that's going to get me, the journalist or the reporter, the most attention on myself, to where the story is not anymore about the individual or the player. It's about the reporter. It's about the journalist. And that's not the way it's supposed to be. You know, we are supposed to talk about what's happening on and off the field with a level of consistency and a level of unbiasedness that I certainly don't see anymore.
Do you think that, do we look at it and say it's because everybody wants to be on TV? Or is it just, I'm doing this, this is what I'm writing, but it seems to me that everybody figures that if they do that, eventually they're going to be on TV in some way.
Well, absolutely. I said this when I was talking about the piece, and I said it jokingly, but it's actually true. And we can even go all the way up to politics with this. The louder that you are, the more outrageous things that you say, doesn't matter if they're true or untrue, you're more likely to get a TV show, a radio show, a bigger gig at your newspaper, more television time, more appearances, more money. If you're just being, you know, loud and screaming and yelling and not show and being biased. I mean, and doing all of these things. So if I'm a young journalist and I'm looking at the landscape of media and I'm seeing the people that are making the big money, the people that are on TV, the people that are on radio, the ones that have millions or hundreds of thousands of Twitter, you know, social media followers, and they're not showing any type of journalistic ethic or code, then, you know, I'm thinking to myself, this is how I got to be. I got to say crazy things. I got to be outrageous. Sometimes I will just out and out lie about certain things because, hey, if that can, you know, get Donald Trump into the presidency, maybe it'll get me a better job, you know, when I get out of college. So I think it's a dangerous spot that we're in because people look towards media to give them information. And if the information is not accurate or the information is hyperbole or the information is just being said to cause a reaction, then how are we going to get, you know, how are we going to know what's true, what's real, what's fake, and all of this stuff, you know, when we're getting out that information? So I don't think that that's a good path that we're going down.
You know, if you see that, and I understand what you're saying, that, but it, as you said, young journalists, you're saying to yourself, I make this as a newspaper reporter, I can make gazoons more if I'm around on TV or something. So I can see the difference. You just say, I'm going to say this and say that. And if you're in a newspaper situation, eventually they're going to get over you. But your whole thing is really to try and get somewhere else so you can be on TV.
Right. If you're starting out, okay, you know that, and of course you know this, the media, it's a very hard industry to break into. At the beginning, there's very little money involved. And the work that you're doing a lot of times is very mundane and not, you know, exciting. And you want to be on television. You want to be heard. You want to be read. And how do you go about doing that? And I think it's a very slippery slope because when you go to college or you just want to be in this industry, you know, you're taught certain things and to do things a certain way. And I'm not saying that you can't be entertaining. You can't be fun. You can't have strong opinions on everything. But when it's getting to the point where you're just regurgitating what you're hearing on TV from people that are now more entertainers than journalists, you know, like what have we become? I mean, if it's going that way, maybe we need to change our classification. You know, maybe we shouldn't be seen as journalists or reporters. Maybe we should be seen as sports entertainment, you know, or, you know, something of that nature, because that's what's happening. Journalists and journalism is turning more and more to TMZ. And that's right. Not a knock on TMZ because they've already said this is who we are. But it's more people turning more towards TMZ style than 60 Minutes or anything like that. And, you know, I don't see that changing in the near future.
You know, as you talk about some of the people, you talked about Ben Roethlisberger, which I thought was very good. They seem to forget about that. You also talk about Tyreek Hill and some of the things that are going on. There's something about Tyreek Hill, and it's like he's nice to play for. We think he's a great football player, but the stuff behind him is amazing. And is that because, you know what, I come down to this. Is it mostly black people that are getting hosed in this more than white people in the NFL in particular? Does that have something to do with it?
Well, not necessarily, because I mean, there's literally just more black players, so the numbers are always going to be, you know, skewed. You know, I think people overlooking Tyreek Hill the same way they're overlooking Ben Roethlisberger. Mm-hmm. So I understand that there's a visual aspect to this. When you see a video like Ray Rice, or you see a video like Joe Mixon, you know, it causes a visceral reaction. But to me, you know, if someone like Tyreek Hill has pled guilty and admitted to hitting, you know, a pregnant woman, right. I mean, I don't need video for that to know that that's, you know, a horrific thing. And my thing with that is that, okay, so Tyreek Hill is playing this weekend, and I don't have any problems with people just wanting to cover the game who don't want to bring it up. Because he's, you know, he's paid his time, and since that time, he's to my understanding, been a good guy. You know, I can understand maybe bringing it up once or whatever, but want to stick to the game. I don't have a problem with that. My problem is when you do that, and then on the flip side of that, the next day, you say Joe Mixon shouldn't be drafted. Because it doesn't equate to me, or Ray Rice should never be back in the NFL. You know, how can you report on Tyreek Hill as if nothing has happened? How can you report on Ben Roethlisberger or Brandon Marshall or Terrell Suggs or Frank Clark, or all these other guys? How can you, Dez Bryant, who hit his mother of all people, how can you just ignore that and then say, you know, I don't want Joe Mixon, you know, to be, you know, be in the league? To me, you know, that's not fair. It's either one or the other. Either you don't want any of these guys in, or, you know, they should all get a second chance. And I'm thinking, the problem that I'm having is there's a lot of picking and choosing. I've seen people say they want Colin Kaepernick out of the NFL. You know, and he hasn't done anything illegal. All he's doing is protesting for civil rights. And they want him out of the NFL, you know, but they won't say a word about Ben Roethlisberger. So to me, it's that hypocrisy that has really been getting to me lately.
Well, and I can see exactly where you're coming from, especially with the thing with Kaepernick, that whole thing. It's like, you know, in the end, you don't have to stand up for the national anthem. It never says that. You never, and they're having a fit over that. And if you decide to get on your knee, that's fine. And people don't see that. They see it as he didn't do this, he didn't do that, he wasn't a veteran. You really don't have to stand up.
Right. It's just strange to me. There's a lot of what I like to call selective outrage. Like, I can understand someone saying, you know, something, I disagree with that. I wish he would stand. That's perfectly fine. But when you're going like, he needs to be kicked out of the league, he needs to be suspended, he's not an American, he's a terrorist. When you're going extra far with it, and you're not like fans, I'm talking about media, and you're going extra with it and making it personal, and he hasn't broken any laws, he hasn't punched any women, you know, he hasn't, you know, possibly sexually assaulted any women, he hasn't gotten drunk on a DUI and put other people's lives in danger. But that's the guy that you're going after. But there's guys on your team, coaches on your team, that have been arrested for various things, and you just think they're the greatest thing since sliced bread. And that, to me, is just that's an irritation to me, because that's not fair. It's simply not fair. You can't, if you're a Dallas Cowboy reporter, you can't say how much you hate Colin Kaepernick when you know Dez Bryant assaulted his mother.
Right, right.
And say Dez Bryant is a good guy.
You know, the Dez Bryant thing, and you can kind of elaborate on what happened there, but I mean, he grabbed the mother and pushed her around and did all this, but they act like nothing happened with that. But I think you go back to, as opposed to you writing or me doing a podcast, I think somebody that is with the newspaper can't very well say much about Dez Bryant, because they're not going to give them any more information.
Right, and we know someone like Dez Bryant is very sensitive, right? You know, he if somebody says anything about him, he's on social media ready to fight. You know, he's going to see him soon. You know, he's always kind of subtly threatening people. So if you write something about Dez Bryant, and whatever you write, you should be able to feel like your job is not threatened, that physically you're not going to be threatened. You got to go in that locker room the next day. You got a job to do. And part of your job is what? Getting quotes from the star players. And Dez Bryant is a star player. But now you wrote something that he doesn't like, or Richard Sherman doesn't like, and now they don't want to talk to you, or they want to threaten you with taking your credential away. So how do you work now if you're on you're a local beat reporter? Because now Richard Sherman doesn't like you because you talked about a news story of him, you know, arguing with his coach, which is, you know, news. So it's a very fickle type of situation. Like I said, it's easier for me as a national independent reporter to say whatever I want to say, because the most I may see these guys is at a Super Bowl or a playoff or an all-star game or something, you know, like that. I'm not dependent on them on a daily basis to work. And so I understand their plight, but, you know, there has to be some sort of middle ground with that.
You know, when you talked about that in the Dez Bryant, the thing that I say now, but will it change? Will it go back to it's all right that they talk about it or not? We're in a situation now where they can't really say anything other than that's what I saw. And if you put that in the newspaper, they're going to give you hell from a franchise.
Right. I think it's only going to get worse. And I don't want to blame social media. I'm just saying that once kind of social media came about and we were able to see, because before, see, you know, and you know this, you know, 5-10 years ago, local reporting was strictly local. Like, that's all you knew. I mean, you had to be in the area to know what was going on.
Right.
So you fast forward to now, if I want to know everything that's going on with the Jacksonville Jaguars on a local scene, it's 4 or 5 clicks on my computer. I can get every local tweet, every local report, every local newspaper, every local website. up. And so now it's expanded out to where maybe those relationships are different now because they don't talk it out. They tweet it out. You know, the communication is broken up because more people know about it, kind of fan in the flame. So I think it's only going to expand, and maybe it's going to take some time for players and media to find that, I guess, that middle ground. But I think it's only going to expand at this point.
I love Robert Lytle. Wasn't that good about it? Does everybody want to be you, wants to be the biggest person in the world or not? It's kind of interesting how people are going to look at that. Something to think about. That'll give you something to do. You know what else we're going to do? We're going to talk to the guy from Atlanta that knows everything. We're going to talk to Jay Busby. He's the guy, Shutdown Corner from Yahoo. We love him. He's from Atlanta. He loves Atlanta, and he knows what's going on. That's why we're going to talk to him. It's coming up on the Babecast right now. Hi, Jay Busby. How are you? I'm very glad that you're joining us today. Let's just give it all. You're from Atlanta, right?
I am from Atlanta, yes.
And I'm okay because one of the things, I am the Patriots fan since the time I was 5 years old, except I watch all of the Atlanta games because they're on here too. And I got to tell you, I'm looking at Atlanta and I'm thinking, they knocked off the Pack. They knocked off Seattle. They didn't even think anything of it. And I hope that Patriots fans, and I'm one of them, I hope they don't think that they're just going to give it to Tom Brady. I'm not feeling that way because I think Atlanta has done extremely well, real good actually this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Atlanta's offense is just it's a thing of beauty. It just comes at you from so many different angles. There's no one piece outside of obviously Matt Ryan that is essential, and all of them can beat you in so many different directions. So it's a scary team. I mean, the defense is a little bit lagging, but the offense is so good that to some degree that doesn't even matter.
You know, I like Freeman a lot in this, but I think that just the way he handles himself, I'm a huge fan of Matty Ice anyway. But there was a time, you remember a couple of years ago when they got in and they were playing really well and they got in, they got blown out in the first round. And I was like, whatever happened? And then it took a while for them to come back. And now they come back again into the Super Bowl. I think they're really good. But is everything really revolve around Matt and how it's handled with him?
Excuse me. Yeah, he's absolutely the key to this. He's taken a huge step forward. Granted, some of it is Kyle Shanahan's offensive coordinating, play calling, and so forth. But yeah, Matt Ryan has never looked this confident, this competent, this settled on a football field. I mean, not he's played for 9 seasons in Atlanta now, and we haven't seen anything like this out of him. You've always heard, oh, he's got the skills, he's got the tools, mm-hmm. he's got all the proper attributes, but it's never all clicked the way that it has now. So it's really something special to see.
You know, one of the things about him, Kyle Shanahan has been there how long now with Matt?
Not super long. I think it's been 2 or 3 years. I don't know off the top of my head.
So if he goes off and goes to the head coaching job, what happens there? Because we all think, oh no, he's gone and it's awful. Does it have to be awful? Because what Matt has learned, he's not going to forget.
Right. Yeah, you want to have that play calling, that design where you are absolutely confusing the defense on every single play. You know, that's what one of the big things that Julio Jones was saying after the game on Sunday night against the Packers, that they hit them so many different directions that the defense was looking at each other going, what's going on here? At that point, the Falcons knew they had them, and they buried them before the first half was over.
You know, they played Seattle and the Packers. They handled both of them. I think it was 80-41 in those two games. And I wonder if people understand, I guess I use the word flying. I don't know what else to use, Jay, because it's like that's sort of the way they've gone. They've gone 6 in a row, and they did very well, and then they had like a little drop-off for about 3 games, and then the next thing you know, they're 6 in a row.
Yeah, they just have absolutely put it together all at the right time. They've learned all the right things that they've needed to, made all the adjustments that they've needed to. It's a team that just every single aspect of it is functioning the way that you would hope a team would. I mean, this is hands down the best Falcons team that Atlanta has ever seen. And granted, that's a low bar to clear. Let's be clear about that. That there's not a great tradition of great Falcons teams here. But that said, this is still a team that's really doing something special, and the city of Atlanta is all over it.
Do you remember the last time they were playing in? I guess it was Miami, right? The last time that they were. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
In the Super Bowl, you mean?
Yeah.
Yes, that didn't go so well for Atlanta.
Well, it was all right. And I have to tell you, one of the people that I knew for a long time being in the West Coast was Eugene Robinson. Do people come back and talk about Eugene Robinson and what happened that he was man of the year and then he got busted for soliciting a prostitute like in a matter of hours? Do they still think they about that? I can imagine, because he was like the greatest thing in the whole wide world. And all of a sudden that happened. I thought of all the people in the world. Go ahead, though. Go ahead.
Yeah, they you know, it does still come up. You know, to his credit, he doesn't run away from it. He earlier this week he accepted blame and responsibility for it. But you know, it's worth mentioning in his defense that was insanely stupid. But that was an overmatched Falcons team. They were playing a Denver Broncos team that just beat them from every single angle. And having one player maybe not having his mind on the game is not going to completely decimate you the way that team got decimated. So that Falcons team was overmatched from the get-go. You can't blame it all on Eugene Robinson. That was just kind of an ugly sideline of it all.
We wouldn't call them overmatched now going against the Patriots?
No, not at all. Right now, they are very much, they're very much equal, probably superior on the offensive end. Defensively, probably a little bit less strong on the defensive end. And then coaching, you know, obviously you can't match up to Bill Belichick, but the Falcons have done something pretty special, so I don't think in any way this is any kind of mismatch.
What about Julio Jones? He's had the toe thing that's been bothering him. Is he all right, and a couple of weeks off makes a big difference?
He is going to be all right according to everything that they are saying to us. You know, obviously, you have to take everything that they say with a shaker full of salt, but everything that we're hearing is that Julio is going to be just fine. He's taken this entire week off. He's got a whole other week before the game rolls around. So should be at 100%.
Have you always been in Atlanta?
Not always, but I was raised here. So,
but that's what I was wondering. So you were around for the last Super Bowl, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yes. For the last Super Bowl and for the dark years of the 70s and 80s as well.
You know, one of the things, Jay, that I find out is that I grew up as a Patriots fan from the time I was 5 years old. But people talking about Brady getting the trophy from, wait a minute, you know, I'm thinking to myself, you know, it's not like they're playing Houston. You know what I mean? And I keep thinking, it's not going to be a blowout thing. I don't see that at all. And I'm a huge Patriot fan, and yet I don't see that at all. And people are saying, well, and he has to give Tom Brady. And I'm like, wait a minute, let's just wait till we get through.
Yeah, it's a long, long way. Brady's going to have he's gonna score plenty. That's absolutely without a doubt. I mean, unless Brady has a complete offensive meltdown, he's going to score plenty. But they're going to be up against an offense that's going to be rolling up the scoreboard as well. So anybody that's taken this game lightly, and to Patriots fans' credit, I don't see a whole lot of that, but anybody that's taken this game lightly is very much mistaken.
Well, and especially the way that they handled it and the way that the Patriots have handled Pittsburgh and stuff going into that. As we get into this thing, and do we look at the big stage and go, it's the big stage, but you're playing in the NFL. It's a big stage. Okay, it's in Houston, but you're still playing in the NFL. And it's not like Matt Ryan's in his second year or that Julio Jones is in his second year. They know how to play games.
Yeah, it's once the hitting starts, once you take that first pop to the mouth, you recognize where you are and you recognize where you're at. These guys are professionals. You know, certainly there's the chance that somebody could wilt under the spotlight, but certainly that could be the case for plenty of Patriots as well. You know, they're outside of Brady and Belichick, you know, you have a very small number of Patriots who are even still around from the last Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. So I think I read 30 out of 53, which obviously that's not a small amount, but more almost half the players are not around from the last Patriots Super Bowl. So it's not a go-to for them as well. So that they will guaranteed be that much more seasoned. I think that, it's the moment will be big, and it might be bigger than some guys, but I don't think you can automatically lay that on the Falcons.
Explain to me about Earnhardt Nation. Were you always into that as well as playing other, you know what I mean? I wonder if you were always into NASCAR before.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, I grew up in Atlanta. So you're around that all the time. So you're always hearing about Dale Earnhardt, Richard Petty, and all of that. So yeah. And I started writing for Yahoo, writing NASCAR. So I worked my way over to the NFL. But there was a story, the story of Dale Earnhardt Jr. was a story that hadn't been told beginning to end before in book form. So I saw the opportunity there and put the book together, and the hardback came out last year. Paperback is coming out on Valentine's Day with new and updated information. It's been a lot of fun.
Ooh, Valentine's Day. It's right at the right time.
Yes, yes, it's a great Valentine's Day gift for your love.
You know what? I have to tell you, this was several years ago, and I was living in New York, and people came over, and it was like Memorial Day or something like that, and we were having a thing, and I kept going in the bedroom and closing the door because I was watching IndyCar. And I didn't want to tell anyone that I was becoming a redneck. And I would like, what are you doing? Oh, nothing. And I wouldn't tell anyone that that was happening. And now I can't tell you that I watch all of them, but I watch a lot of them. And sometimes when it's on, I sit there and I watch it for 3 hours. And I think to myself, okay, I'm becoming a redneck. And people will walk in and go, what are you watching? I'm watching the NASCAR, and they'll like leave. You know, and I said, I don't think I'm a redneck, but I kind of like it, even though I don't know that much about it. But I do kind of like it.
Well, it's a primal thing. I mean, we can understand I am faster than you. My car is faster than your car. We can understand that on a basic level. And then above and beyond that, it's a story of personalities. And so anybody that writes off NASCAR as just a redneck sport or just cars going around in circles, you know, they haven't been to a race. They haven't thrown themselves into it. They haven't given it the chance because it's, you know, it is as primal as sports get. One driver trying to drive faster than another. We do that ourselves when we're out on the streets. I mean, it's one of the few sports that we can associate with in our everyday lives every single day.
Do you think that people go there to see the wrecks? I mean, I think some do, yeah, but do, not like they used to be. They really are still there to see it because I think it's pretty intense. And when you, even when you're watching on TV, it's so intense. And then you wonder, you know, do people go and see that? And I think they do.
Well, you know, it's maybe not so much as seeing the wrecks, because obviously you don't want to see anybody hurt, but seeing the possibility of wrecks, you know, mm-hmm. knowing that you're going and watching these guys going 200 miles an hour, 6 inches from each other, and the possibility is there that they could wreck and flip and have all kinds of carnage. Yeah, I mean, you know, no one will actively go and hope that no one's going to root for the wreck. You know, it's not like rooting for a fight in hockey. It's a different sort of thing because, you know, there are real stakes. People do die behind the wheels of these cars. But there is, it's that risk. It's that possibility. It's somebody having the guts to do something that most of the rest of us don't. And that's what people admire about it.
Let me ask you your thought about Brett Musburger retiring. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I hope that he was not pushed out. I hope that he was not shown the door because of his comments on Joe Mixon during the bowl game a couple of weeks ago. But I always love Brent. I mean, you know, I always love Brent Musburger because he's always a guy who embodied a game in the way that Keith Jackson did, in the way that Al Michaels does. You know, seeing these guys, it's really something. Seeing them go off into the sunset is tough for sports fans of a certain age.
A friend said to me when he was there, it was a big game. Like when you're looking live, but he always believed that he was there. And even when they didn't do this or he didn't do that and it got changed around, I wondered about that because the guy said to me, he was the big game.
Right, right. And, yeah. You know, we don't have that so much anymore because media has become so fractured and so diversified. And you might be watching a game, but you've also got your laptop open and you're texting your buddies on the phone. And there's not quite that same voice that carries that air of authority that these guys did. And so, yeah, it's something is definitely lost without these guys behind the mic.
You know, I was just talking with Robert Littell from Black Sports Online, and he said people are coming into the media, especially into newspapers, but he thinks they're just doing that because they really want to be Skip Bayless, that they really want to be online where they don't have to admit to something. They can say, I can say this, and then the next day I don't have to say it. And because they're not called or whatever it is on that. And he said, people are trying to do that and make that kind of money as opposed to what you guys do to write to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to say, to have some kind of moron opinion. You know, it's easy to just go and spout off something about whatever you want. You know, Tom Brady's a fraud and he's been propped up by Bill Belichick or whatever you want to say. It's easy to go and spout that, but it's tougher to follow through with that and to be able to put in the hard work and the effort. Now, there are guys who will go out of their way to deliberately try to stoke public emotion, but they tend to get found out pretty quickly. They tend to get spotted for what they are pretty quickly. And so there is a Skip Bayless. There are a few others out there that try that route. But I think that by and large, they get rooted out pretty quickly and get disregarded. And I think that we can all think of names that the more nonsense that they spout, the less the people pay attention to them.
What should I ask you about comic books? Tell me what you know about comic books, because you're telling me things that I don't know, and I want to find out about it.
Oh, well, you know what? It's just all about, at this point, it's all about the movies. It's all about, I was a comic book geek from way, way back, and so it's kind of a thrill for me to see all of these movies being made, X-Men, Doctor Strange, Avengers, all of that stuff. Those are my jams.
So he likes all of that. I love talking with you. I know you're busy. Have a wonderful time at the game because I'll be watching on TV. I have no desire to go to Houston, but I appreciate it immensely. Jay, thank you so much.
Oh, absolutely. Glad to do it.
All right. Did I love it all? Jay, thank you very... And for our English-speaking friends, that's thank you very much. God, help me in this. Are you doing taxes? That's what I'm doing this weekend. I am not watching the Pro Bowl. It's right up the street. I'm not even a tiny bit interested. Do you care about that anymore? You know, nothing else is on in the middle of July, so we kind of watch the baseball All-Star game. I don't care what's on in basketball. I mean, when you get to, you know, when you get to the tournament, then I'll worry about it. You know, when you get to the playoff thing. But I've got to do my damn... Jerry, I'm going to cough in the middle of this, so maybe you could take this out. Oh, I had the worst cold in the world. It was horrible. Anyway, first of all, I've got to do taxes this weekend, and I'm not very good at it. I've already called my person 3 times. He said, can you just send me the taxes? No, I have a million things to talk about, because when he gets me on the phone, he knows that I'm going to, like, talk crazy. So I'm working on my taxes. It's not very fun at all. Have I seen anything good on TV? I don't know, but when is American Ninja Warrior? Because I'm getting to the point that I go to Esquire and I watch stuff that I've already seen. I have no life. And, you know, I'm busy doing stuff. And everybody, you know, I get my flu shot. I'm very good about the flu shot, right? So I have been making a lot of stuff lately. I've been making people that are sick with the flu. I've been leaving stuff on their front porch. I won't go near them or anything. And I've been absolutely fine. And about 10 days ago, I got it bad. And I didn't get flu. I got bronchitis. I'm going to die. I've been through 3 boxes of Kleenexes already. Oh, I don't like this. I'll be better off when I have to go now. It's tax time. I'm the Fabulous Sports Babe. It is, after all, the Fabulous Sports Babe.
If you know the Babe at all, you'll know the show never ends. Follow her on Twitter at Real Sports Babe and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. This has been the Fabulous Sports Babe on Radio Influence. Radio Influence brings you the best in digital media broadcasting. When it comes to sports, we've got experts like national sports radio host Rich Herrera, the Fabulous Sports Babe, and former Major League Baseball manager Kevin Kennedy. Want a good laugh? Then go on the beach with Pants and Roller Girl. Get Duffified live with Chef Brian Duffy, or just LOL with Nancy Alexander. And when it comes to real life, Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger and Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill will make you think. When it comes to what you want, Radio Influence has you covered. Find our programming on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.